The National Astronomy Meeting gives people an opportunity to find out what others are working on and where the science might take us in the future. Mark McCorcran from the European Space Agency, or ESA, was at the meeting to explain ESA's cosmic vision, their plan to commission and support space missions over the coming years.
Cosmic Vision is a programme which we put together in the last few years in the European Space Agency to provide some structure, some top-level science guidance of the sorts of questions the community would like to see answered. And then we opened up an announcement of opportunity for people to actually propose actual missions against those questions in 2007. Spaceflight, of course, takes a long time to put missions together, but also we've gone through a whole evaluation process to look at studying the missions, see what's feasible time-wise, cost-wise, what the best science is. So we started with 65 missions, all told, and we're now down to the final six or seven, out of which we're still doing a shootout. It's kind of a technical shootout, looking at what's feasible on the right timescale. We want to get these things launched quite quickly, relatively, 2017-18. And so we don't want to do lots of technology development. You could think of crazy things that might take till 2030 to do, but we want to get some missions in the pipeline because we have missions in this decade flying, but we have a bit of a gap towards the end, and so we want to get these things going.
So what were the questions that we think we want to answer?
Well, there are a whole range of questions, starting from how does the sun work, how does the sun influence our lives every day, the weather which we have, space weather, but also the weather on the surface of the planet. And, of course, that's of great importance to many people as it relates to climate change. But then going to the other end of the universe, looking at the overall cosmological appearance of the universe. Why is the universe the way that it is? How has the universe evolved to the state that it's in? What's the fate of the universe? But then there's all the things in between. How were stars born? How do planets get born around stars? How do they evolve? What are the chances of finding the conditions for life and maybe even life elsewhere? And then in our own solar system, is life unique in the solar system? Can we go to Mars? Can we go to the oceans of Europa under the ice crust there? And are the conditions ripe for life there? So it's a kind of an overarching set of science questions. Many of the missions will approach many of those questions.
And so was it split evenly? Did you say we have this much resources, we have this many questions, we want to make sure we give X resources per X question?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And in fact, more traditionally, rather than per question, you would have seen it allocated in the past per discipline. But there was no precondition set on this. In fact, this time around, the astronomers are in the ascendant. They've got, out of the M-class missions, the medium-class missions we're studying, they've got three of those, three out of the four. And two of the L-class missions, the large missions, those are astronomy or astrophysics-related. That sounds like the planetary people are doing very poorly, but of course they've got other things which they're doing, including going to Mars with NASA, and that's not something that was in the Cosmic Vision process. That's a separate program at ESA. So the whole Martian exploration is going on in tandem, in parallel.
So what's the difference between a medium-class mission and a large-class?
The amount of money is different between the two of them, and originally the M mission started off at €300 million brought in from ESA. We've had to look at that again, and now we think that to make sense out of those missions, the science goals that the proposers asked, but also that the community felt were the best ones, probably going to cost us about €450 million. We expect then money to come in from the member states of ESA as well, and the European countries who contribute, building bits of the payload, building parts of the instrumentation, maybe roughly €150 million more. So about €600 million for one of those. The L missions have a contribution from us of about €650 million, but they will be actually, all three of those which we're looking at the moment, would be in tandem with United States, Japan, and other collaborators. And so those are much bigger missions overall, up to $2 billion, for example, for our Jupiter mission, EJSM. So the amount of resources is larger there, but also we expect them to do more stuff. So the M missions are supposed to be very focused science goal experiments, if you like. Let's pick one question, let's get an answer to it, let's do it as well as we can. The L's are generally more observatory-style missions where you're going to look at a whole broad range of questions with a suite of instruments or go and do outer solar system exploration, which is very expensive to do. It takes a long time to get there.
And so what are the ones that you've considered? You said you've whittled it down to a short list.
Well, we have on the M side, the medium missions at the moment, we have three full M's, if you like, the full-scale ones. One's called Euclid, and that's a dark energy mission. It's going to be looking at this mysterious stuff that appears to be accelerating the universe rather than the universe slowing down, as you might expect. The second one is a mission called Plato, and Plato is designed to go and look for planets around nearby stars, and it does it by watching for so-called transits. If you get the alignment just right, a planet orbiting a star will go in front of the star, as seen from your telescope or from the Earth, and it'll make the brightness of the star drop very slightly for a day or so as it transits across, or a few hours. So that's two out of three. The third one is solar orbiter, looking at the Sun and looking at how the Sun impacts our environment. And to get the best possible view on the Sun, you want to get much closer to the Sun. And so rather than sitting out at the distance of the Earth, like our current mission, SOHO, does, solar orbiter will be going into just a third of that distance, so much closer in. But also it's going to rise up above the plane of the planets, so it can look down at the Sun, not exactly from above, but from a high enough angle that it can see what's happening at the poles of the Sun. So those are the three big M's. And the last one is a thing called Speaker. A Speaker is actually a Japanese mission. And it's a lot like our Herschel Space Telescope, which we launched a year ago. But the big difference to Herschel, which is doing fantastic stuff, Speaker is designed to be actually cooled down. The telescope will have refrigerators on it and cool the telescope down to just 6 degrees above absolute zero. So minus 200 and, see if I can do the math, 67 degrees Kelvin. And that reduces the background, the emission of the telescope itself, and it makes all the instruments much more sensitive. So it's like a super Herschel. And we would be contributing the actual telescope plus one of the instruments. So those are our four M's.
And the L-class, the large missions?
Well, there we have three missions which are effectively all in collaboration with the United States, with NASA. One of them is called EJSM, the Europa-Jupiter System mission, going off to Jupiter, studying Jupiter in great detail, but also flying two orbiters, one around Ganymede and one around Europa. And that's to study those very interesting moons. Those moons have water oceans, we think, under very thick crusts of ice. And so very interesting environments, potentially, for life elsewhere in our solar system. Second one is called ICSO, the International X-ray Observatory, and this is a big collaboration again with NASA, and we're joining forces to build a much bigger telescope which will collect much fainter X-ray photons from the high-energy sky, from places like black holes, the extreme environments in our universe where very violent events take place. And then finally, we have a mission called LISA, and LISA's slightly less conventional than the other two. LISA is designed as a mission to detect gravitational waves, so the influence of gravity spreading through the universe from violent events like black holes merging, very high energy events where as the material is converted from matter into energy, you get ripples in the space-time. And LISA does this in a very interesting way. It puts three spacecraft in the solar system, 5 million kilometers apart in a triangle. And as these gravity waves pass through the LISA constellation, the three arms between the spacecraft will change length very slightly as the space-time is distorted. And we have these incredibly high-precision measurements measuring this 5 million kilometers to nanometers, so 10 to the minus 9 of a meter, over 5 million kilometers. And we do that on the three arms simultaneously, and by actually seeing how the arms change length differentially, we can even work out where in the sky that object is. And we can go and find it, and say, right there, at this moment in time, two black holes have just merged, and we see this fantastic ringing signal, this big bong, as the two black holes merge together. So LISA's really odd. Of course, it's also predicated on something we've never detected, which is gravity waves.
They all sound incredibly interesting. They're all answering really important and interesting questions. How do you choose which ones to support?
Well, fortunately, we don't. That's why we have a whole community of scientists who we have in our advisory structures, and we consult them, and we try to place science foremost. And these are very difficult decisions, and people have to, you know, struggle with their own conscience sometimes and say, well, this is the one I really like because this is the area I work in. I can take a big enough picture and see that this is probably, this other mission is the one we should be going for. So we have a whole series of committees of working scientists, active people, who make recommendations. They pass those recommendations to us, and we try to look at them in terms of the programmatics. How long will it take to build? Who will we collaborate with? The technologies we need to develop that we don't have yet. So fundamentally, it's a whole series of difficult decisions to make. All of these things we'd like to do. So we're always rejecting good ideas. But in fact, it's a very positive process because it means that you have a robust check that you're doing good stuff.
Mark McCorcran explaining ESA's cosmic vision.